Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Clearly, the big story in the metropolitan area this past week has been the flooding. Lots of rain last weekend is a big part of that problem. We'll ask why the flooding happened as quickly and severely as it did, and we'll get some comments from reporters who covered the story. We'll also talk about the impact on the people who have been through it all before. First, where are we now? We're joined by St. Louis Public Radio reporters Eli Chen and Stephanie Lecce. They are with me in studio. And by phone, Jim Sievaking, Science Operations Officer and Acting Meteorologist with the National Weather Service. Thank you all for being with us. So, Jim, are you there?
I am.
All right, let's start with you. The sun is out. It's a pretty day, but are we out of the woods yet?
Yeah, finally the sun came out today, and looks like a beautiful weekend on tap with highs in the 60s and 70s, and no rainfall in sight, at least major rainfall, until maybe the middle of next week.
But I'm expecting to hear the word but from you following that sentence.
Yeah, that seems like what we've been having to do lately is, caveat everything with a but because of such a historic event, again, just 17 months after we had a flooding event in the same river basin, in December of 2015.
What I was getting at, my impression is that the Missouri and the Mississippi are still rising.
They're just about to crest. The Missouri River at St. Charles is cresting right now, and the Mississippi River from Alton down through Chester will be cresting today through tomorrow. And we're within, a foot of crest right now. So it looks right now that the worst is over.
Well, where does this particular event place in connection with others? You mentioned 2015. We can go back to 1993, which was a biggie. This didn't come anywhere near that, did it?
No, it's a different type of event. 1993 was a long-term event where we had multiple rounds of thunderstorms across the upper Midwest, and we had rain here as well, but the real driving factor was up across Iowa. I remember that there were pictures of Iowa that looked like it was more of a lake than a state with crops. So it's a different type of event. It's a short event where you get a lot of rainfall in a short period of time, and that causes these rivers, especially the small ones like the Merrimack, to really rise quickly. It just so happened that we've had that happen twice now over the last 17 months, again back in 2015, and then now in May of 2017. If you think about it, you have to go back to 1982 to get an event similar to these events. So, that's over 30 years ago.
Well, I can go back farther than that to the early 70s when we had 200-year floods back-to-back.
Yeah. Yeah, it can happen. The 100-year flood, it can be, misunderstood. I mean, I came in and the forecaster said, well, I must be 500 years old because I've lived through five 100-year floods. And I started laughing. I said, you do realize that that's not what it means. And he said, yeah, of course. But, it just simply means that you have a 1% chance of the river reaching that flood level in any given year. Well, and you can reach it in multiple times in a given year.
Using those numbers like that, though, is that likely to give a kind of a false assurance or reassurance to people who live in the floodplain? Well, it's 100 years now and the next one.
Yeah, you're right. And we tend to not use that terminology. It was some terminology that was used back in the day when they did the floodplains and they did the mapping and, 100-year flood. And it was basically based on insurance is how they came up with that. But we like to do exceedance probabilities and recurrence intervals. And so, it's possible that you could have another 100-year flood just, a couple weeks from now. It doesn't mean that it's going to be, in that same, like that we had a 100-year flood now, and so now we have to wait 99 years for another flood. That's not how it works.
Well, while we're talking in this vein, I'd like to bring in a piece of tape that we have with someone from the flood area, Tommy Lisick of Arnold. She lives off Starling Airport Road, which was flooded out. Let's hear what she has to say about all of this.
It is no longer fair to say it's an every 30-year flood. That's what they said in 2015. This is a 30-year flood. This never happens. Well, that's not the case. I'm 30 years old, and this is the third time that I can remember that we've dealt with it.
I guess it depends on who you are and where you are and when you are there to designate these things. Stephanie Lecce, go ahead.
Don, if I may interrupt, Tommy wasn't the only one who I heard when I was out in Arnold who made these kinds of comments. People just were about at their limit saying, I just dealt with this a year and a half ago. A lot of them were there in 1993, and I think that there's a lot of frustration among residents that these events seem to keep happening despite assurances that, you know, these are rare occurrences and that not much has actually changed to help those who are living near the floodplains.
Is she living near a floodplain or is she in the floodplain?
That I'm not entirely sure on. There's a kind of a nebulous little border there off of Starling Airport where some people are and some people aren't, and they're a mere stone's throw away from each other.
Jim Siva King, should people be living in a floodplain?
They're taking a risk. They're taking a chance, just like you know, anywhere that you live, that there's some kind of natural hazard that you could be affected by. Obviously, they're called a floodplain for the reason that that's where the water is going to go when the water gets too high. And, you know, these events are rare. When you are talking anywhere from 6 to 10 inches of rain over a three-day period, we just don't have that very often. It just so happened that we've had it twice, again, in that 17-month period. But you have to go back to, you know, 82 for an event of that magnitude before that. Again, 1993 and 95, those were some of that issue was more of a backwater issue from the Mississippi. You know, when the Mississippi is high, then the water kind of pools up into the Merrimack River, and you can get some flooding in that case.
So, yeah. Even the River de Pere, as I understand it, which is always relatively benign, is experiencing some very high water right now.
Yeah, and that's backwater, mostly from the Mississippi River. The Mississippi River is at going to crest, I believe, at 42 feet, which, you know, that's only happened 4 or 5 times since records have been kept. So that's a pretty historic number as well. 40 feet is our major flood stage for St. Louis, and like I said, we've only reached that a few times. So,
what do the people downstream have to look forward to after what we've experienced here? A lot of talk about the levees squeezing that water down to folks farther south.
Right. So, you know, how these heavy rainfall events happen is that we have flash flooding usually in the smaller creeks, and then they go into the smaller rivers like the Merrimack, and then they finally get into the bigger rivers like the Mississippi, and then all that water has to funnel its way down to the Gulf of Mexico. So, yeah, there's a major flood wave that's going down the Mississippi River, and it'll affect places like Cape Girardeau and you know, places like Cairo, Illinois, you know, and points south as we go through the next week.
Are we over-levied up here?
That's a point for debate. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert in that that arena, but I can tell you that, like, for the Merrimack Basin, there really aren't that many levees. There's some in Valley Park. There's some agricultural levees, but for the most part, especially in the headwaters of the Merrimack, it's pretty open. And you know, this is just a good case of where a lot of rain fell in a short period of time and caused the flooding.
Jim, would you think this is a climate change issue?
I certainly believe that there is some climate change going on. We've ran the numbers for the St. Louis area, and you can see over the, you know, since 1950, there is an increase in precipitation that we've had over that period of time. So is it man-made or not? I'm not sure, but the climate certainly is changing.
Jim, you mentioned before that the Mississippi and the Missouri are about ready to crest. Can you give us an update about what's going on in the West Alton area? I know that there's a voluntary evacuation order in place there, and officials are trying to reassure residents that the levees are holding, despite some concern that the waters are topping out, they may overflow. Can you give us an update what's happening there?
Yeah, the North County Consolidated Levee in Alton, West Alton area, it's basically at this level of the river is when it starts to overtop it. And so the water is just coming over the top of the levee. It's not breached. It's not broken. And so that's why there's a you know, voluntary evacuation order. But if it were to breach, then that would be a different story.
Well, the good news, Jim, is that the forecast for the foreseeable future, anyway, the next week or so, no rain, correct?
That's correct. You know, we could get some showers, anytime, maybe tomorrow or the next day, with some systems that are coming down from the north, but it would be very light and it wouldn't do anything to the rivers. The next chance of widespread significant precipitation would be next week, probably Wednesday, Thursday time frame, when a front kind of lays up over the top of us.
The longer the wait, the better.
Exactly.
Jim Sievert-King of the National Weather Service, thank you so much for being with us and bringing us up to speed on what's likely to happen weather-wise over the next several days. Been great talking to you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We'll come back in just a moment and continue our conversation with Stephanie Lecce and Eli Chen. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We continue behind the headlines with our discussion of the flooding in the St. Louis area this past week. With me in studio still are Eli Chen and Stephanie Lecce, St. Louis Public Radio reporters. And I'd like to talk to you guys for a couple of minutes about what you've experienced this week. Eli, let me start with you.
Sure.
Look at this kind of as a reporter's postcard, if you will. What were your impressions about what you were seeing this week from the environmental science reporter
Right. So I did a bit of reporting out in areas of Valley Park and Eureka this week. And I started off this week kind of driving up to areas where roads were closed off. There seemed to be kind of a gathering of people around these areas because, you know, water was, you know, literally rising on their streets. And the impression I got when I was in Valley Park was that, you know, people definitely did see this as a problem. But in this one subdivision that was in Valley Park, people were almost kind of shrugging their shoulders at the situation. I mean, they'd gone through the December 2015 flood before. But their houses, you know, at the time wasn't, you know, they were kind of untouched at the moment. So, you know, they were fine with it.
I get the impression, Stephanie, that the people are sort of resigned to the fact that this is going to happen from time to time, as it has.
Oh, definitely. I think I saw that same resilience in Arnold. Not just Tommy, but some of her neighbors had been through this several times before, and it was kind of like, well, we've done it before. We'll do it again. In fact, we know pretty well how to use the sandbags and fill them. They had all sorts of tips and tricks of how to quickly fill them and get them out. I even asked a group of residents off of that road, Starling Airport, just south of the Merrimack, you know, what does it feel like when you're putting in so much effort to sandbag and put these bags out there, and then the water just goes over them, and then you just have to do it all again. And they just, like Eli said, kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, well, this is what we have to do to protect ourselves and our neighbors.
Yeah, and I do want to add, though, that I did, you know, in the feature that ran earlier today, I mean, I did talk to somebody who was tired of having to deal with this all over again. Because of the December 2015 flood, this woman, Sharon Watson, who's a retired football coach over at Eureka High, she had 25,000 dollars worth of damage after that flood. But she argued that this flood was actually worse because the rains lasted longer, and she had to, you know, keep monitoring her basement. And she told me she doesn't want to do this again.
Yeah. I heard that, too, from folks in Arnold. Obviously, those, you know, who were resigned in the moment to, you know, just continuing to work. You know, I think if after the flooding, there are going to be a lot of questions about, do we stay, do we go, do we risk going through this again? I talked to one woman who basically said, as she's putting sandbags on her front porch, saying, you know, if this gets into the house, I'm done. I'm out. This was a lovely little house, but I'm going. And Tommy Lisick, who we heard from before, she kind of said the same thing. In the 2015 flood, she and her mother lost all sorts of pr- priceless memories you can't get back, yearbooks, photographs of her late father and grandfather. You know, those are the kinds of emotional tolls that it's you know, hard to quantify.
She, Tommy, sounds like she has had enough. We have a clip when, in which she is expressing that.
I think that the city needs to be buying us out. And you know what? They don't have to buy us out at a profit. Just buy us out at an equal amount and we'll leave. You know? But until then, most of us can't because we all have mortgages. You know? And I don't know that any of us can get what we owe right now.
That's Tommy Lisick, who lives out in that area and has been hit again and again. I'm going to bring someone else into the conversation now while we're talking about houses and housing, and that would be Josh Kahn, co-owner of the Josh Kahn and Katie Busk Realty Team. They're active in the Eureka South County area, and they have been big in social media activity, monitoring the flood through Facebook on the Eureka Mo community page. There's also a Eureka Strong hashtag on Twitter where folks have been communicating flood news. Thank you, Josh, so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about this housing situation. You're a realtor. What are you hearing with regard to people's frustration over living where they live and wanting to move on out?
You know, I'm sure that goes around. I can't say that I've heard it a whole lot. I mean, you know, I know that there's people who are probably upset who did lose their homes, but that wasn't really what I was experiencing when we were down there. I mean, you know, the housing market in St. Louis is really strong. The housing market, particularly in Eureka, I pay a lot of attention to Eureka, is very strong. And, you know, our community seems to be growing every day.
What's it likely to do to someone like you, however? I mean, I think a lot of people hear the news that we've been getting all week,
sure,
and saying, boy, I'm not going to move there.
Well, I don't know. I think that we, you know, got a lot of positives out of this. I mean, obviously, it's a horrible thing what happened. I mean, nobody wants to go through a natural disaster. We know there's a lot of people that lost a lot. But, I mean, you know, the amount of exposure that Eureka's gotten due to this is really just incredible. I mean, if anything, you know, during the 2015 flood, our town blew up afterwards. I mean, people wanted to live there. They saw us on TV. They saw us in the news. They saw the community coming together. And they actually wanted to be there. I really do believe that after all said and done, people are going to want to be here even more so than they did before.
How much of that, Josh, though, is maybe confusion, as we've heard before, over how frequent these kinds of events happen? I mean, if someone hears about these floods and thinks, oh, mm-hmm, this is a rare occurrence, you know, I'll take my chances, I'll move there because it's unlikely to happen again anytime soon.
Sure.
I mean, do you have a moral responsibility as a real estate agent to be telling people, well, you know, you really have to evaluate these risks?
Well, I think that whenever you're buying a house, you have to evaluate the risks. And, you know, a lot of residences that are located in Eureka and other cities are not in areas that are prone to flooding. I mean, we do have homes that will flood under these kind of circumstances, but the majority of the residences, at least in Eureka, are not in floodplains whatsoever.
What's the situation in Eureka right now? Things are getting somewhat better from what I understand.
It's incredible how fast they're rebounding. Today, it's more of a cleanup effort. You know, people are down there and they're getting rid of the sandbags. They're cleaning up the streets. Their goal is to have South Central open for business this weekend. So the morale is really, really high down there. You know, in 2015, they were prepared, but as prepared as you can be. I mean, I certainly haven't witnessed anything like that in my life like we did in 2015. We lost a lot of our businesses down there. You know, Central was closed down for a long time, but, you know, we kind of look at this, even though we know a lot of people lost things, we look at this as a little victory that we were able to save the heartbeat of our city, and I think people are really excited about it opening back up.
You have a somewhat of an advantage in all of this and seeing what's going on because you put a drone in the sky to watch it, didn't you?
I did, yes.
And what did that tell you?
You're talking about the drone footage, right?
Yeah.
It gives you a different perspective. I mean, and I think we all in Eureka knew how dramatic the flood was. We knew how much devastation it could cause. But it's hard to let people who aren't in Eureka, who aren't experiencing it, know. And I think that's where a drone comes in handy. I mean, we can fly this thing up in the air. We can get it out to people. One of our videos, you know, on Facebook, I think went out to about 250,000 people that didn't live in Eureka. I mean, to me, that's phenomenal. So all of a sudden, people are seeing the devastation. They're concerned. They want to see what's going on. And they start following our city. And we think that exposure is what's helped us, you know, gain the attention, gain the help that we needed to really survive this thing.
Social media has really been active in this area. And I assume very, very helpful.
I think it's been great. I mean, that's kind of, you know, that's kind of my generation. I mean, I was always big on Facebook. The reason we originally started this page in Eureka, which we started back in 2015, is because I live there. I have two small kids. We're always looking for things to do. We wanted a better level of communication. We know all these awesome things about Eureka that a lot of people don't know. So we wanted to create this social media page that really showcased, you know, the best of what we had to offer. And that's why it originally started. But as it grew, it started to be a very good way to kind of spread the word, spread the news, you know, and during these floods, which is the second one we've managed this page through, it's really been a great way to get the word out that we need help, to get the word out what's going on, what roads are open, what roads are closed, where we need sandbags. I mean, it's turned into a great thing for that.
Well, anything you want to add, Josh, before we let you go and move on?
I don't think so. I mean, I do want to add that the city will be back open this weekend. So, you know, if you do want to come out and check out Eureka, I mean, you're welcome to do so. Our whole city's not closed. There's a lot of great houses in Eureka that were not flooded. And, you know, there's a lot of great things about Eureka. There really is. You just come check it out.
Oh, well, we have many times, Josh. Thank you so much for being with us. Good luck to you and yours and all of the folks out there in the cleanup operation.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Nice to have you with us.
All right.
Eli, let me come back to you with regard to the cleanup. I mean, this is a big job. In terms of the environmental, you know, the residue left by the floods, do you see any problem there with the cleanup?
That's an area that I don't really actually know too much about in terms of environmental residue. I most of my reporting has been kind of focused on trying to get in touch with people who have been struggling with the flood. And I know that with the woman I interviewed, she has to worry about, well, her basement was flooded with sewer water. Yeah. So she has to sanitize her place.
That's the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The water is a hazard in and of itself because of runoff from farms and chemicals and things of that kind.
Sure. And I believe Eureka High School was also flooded with also sewer water. And she had also expressed, you know, concern about the fact that, you know, it's AP testing week and you know, people want to get back to school and you know, move on with their academic lives. But the school is maybe not like the best place to be.
I know the state has also given a waiver through the cleanup of certain environmental regulations, air pollution, disposal of some of the stuff, so that way it's easier for folks to be cleaning up. So I think that'll be helping. But obviously, you know, the hazardous material, sewage and stuff is a concern for folks.
Did either of you have any contact with people who are isolated, that is, unable to get out of like Jefferson County or places where they were simply trapped by the flood?
Well, I'll be honest. We were driving on Lime Ferry as they were closing it down to one lane in the southbound direction. we just managed to squeak by southbound on I-55 when they were closing it. I think folks were really worried about being able to get back and forth. Fortunately, we didn't really meet anybody who was worried about getting stuck, but I do know that a few hospitals, the VA system at Jefferson Barracks, they had sleeping accommodations for their staff, so that way they would be able to be there. I mean, critical staff, doctors, nurses, et cetera, you know, who needed to be there. They had sleeping arrangements, so they wouldn't even have to have worried about what was going on with the roads. It was a rapidly changing situation.
Eli and Stephanie, I guess the story to follow up all of this is going to be the levees. And, you know, is the right levee in the right place? Do we have too many of them? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, so so people are talking about the Valley Park levee. That's the I guess, controversy along the lower Merrimack. And, you know, the woman I talked to in Eureka, you know, she said, you know, everyone knows it was improperly built, but the Army Corps of Engineers has not confirmed that. This was a levee that was, you know, federally funded. It was built almost 10 years ago, and it was supposed to be built at the 100-year flood level. But some data released last fall indicate that it could have been actually built to the 500-year flood level. And you know, there are some thoughts about whether or not, you know, it caused more damage than it should have to, you know, neighboring communities to Valley Park.
Yeah, Steph, any thoughts about that? That'll be one of your stories, I know.
Yes, we'll be obviously following up with a lot of the people we've talked to during this flooding to find out how they're recovering, how these different communities, Eureka, Valley Park, Arnold, are recovering. But yeah, the levees are the big question, how that water gets squeezed down into other communities and makes it worse for them. That, I think, is going to require a lot of soul searching, and I think a lot of officials are going to be on the hot seat because of this. I think also the issue we were talking about before, cities letting people buy houses in the floodplains. I think a lot of residents after this are fed up and want to see some changes to where people can live and where they can't.
And if people are angry here about the flooding, people downstream are just as angry because they feel their situation has been exacerbated by what we do up here.
For sure.
I want to thank you both, Eli Chen and Stephanie Lecce, for being with us. We'll let you go and go back to work, and we'll continue on. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Great to see you. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.